T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's the Nissan Mets Hot Stove Night on WCBS.
Here's the 0-2 pitch. Fastball in there. Strike 3 called. How about that Houdini act by Jacob deGrom?
Nissan. Innovation that excites.
Frazier hits it high in the air. Deep to left field. Forget it. That's a grand salami for Todd Frazier.
Now let's head down to sunny Florida for the Nissan Mets Hot Stove Night on WCBS with your hosts, Howie Rose, Wayne Randazzo, and Ed Coleman.
And we welcome you to First Data Field, the spring training home of the New York Mets, where in less than 48 hours, the first exhibition game of the 2019 season will be played. We're glad you're with us this Thursday night. Along the way tonight, we will hear from Brandon Nimmo and Zach Wheeler and Wilson Ramos, but we are going to hit the ground running. And in view of that, we are setting a record tonight because this is a first for me. Brody Van Wagenen, the Mets general manager, is sitting here in a seatbelt and a harness. It's the only thing we could do to guarantee that we can keep him in one place for about 13 minutes because he has already set the all-time GM record for most energy displayed in spring training. How are you not in bed yet?
Wow, it's fun. I'm glad that people have noticed that I've been moving around. I have a hard time standing in one spot, and I'm not very good at being idle.
So you like being considered ubiquitous then?
Well, I like moving. Let's put it that way. Whether or not it projects out to others, I can't help myself.
What's this been like for you to make this transition from agent to general manager, and now getting to see your team on the field for the first time?
It's been great. I mean, I think there's so many synergies between what I was doing before and what I'm doing now in terms of, you know, we got to identify the best talent in the world, try to develop that talent, and then try to create sustainable careers. Now we're just sort of having that that end product be winning games as opposed to, you know, monetizing the talent. So it's been a pretty seamless transition, but we've added a great group of people and we've had a lot of fun.
You know, one of the things that I was alluding to, and I talked about you being all over the place, is that it really is sort of a new philosophy among general managers. You're not the only one, but it wasn't that long ago when Steve Phillips was the Mets GM, and he was a constant in the clubhouse, which was against the grain of how most general managers operated in those days, and he took some heat for that. But now it seems that we're in a completely new era. Are you comfortable moving around the clubhouse and moving around the field as a general manager now, as opposed to an agent where, you know, maybe you didn't have that kind of an access, but, you know, you did have relationships?
I'm happy to be behind the curtain. They didn't let agents back there in the clubhouse before. But, you know, I think player communication is something that's important to me. It was important as an agent. And I think being present every day, as opposed to just being on the good days and the bad days, I think is important. I think the players appreciate it.
What's the communication been like with the guys that you know really well, former clients of yours? You know, in particular, Jacob deGrom, but you signed Jed Lowrie as well. Just those types of guys that you've already had relationships established with. How's that kind of carried over?
I think it's been great because there's familiar faces in the room. It makes my transition a little bit easier, and I feel like I have a pretty good pulse of the clubhouse as a result of that, not just for the players that I'd represented before, but their teammates and friends that I got a chance to meet over the years that, you know, I had a pretty good understanding of what was going right and a pretty good understanding of what they hope to change in the new regime.
Do they communicate with you differently? I mean, you're their boss now instead of somebody that was more of a confidant or someone who was kind of a teammate in a sense?
Well, I don't notice a change. You know, I think you may have to ask them in terms of how they see it. But as far as the change from my vantage point, I think it's been pretty consistent. And, you know, I do want them to be able to be candid with me and be able to, you know, for me to be transparent with them too. And I think, you know, as long as I take that mindset, hopefully it'll feel natural for them.
How long do you think it'll take before the prefix former agent Brody Van Wagenen is eliminated from your job description?
Well, I think once the games start, I think people will have an easier path of looking at the results on the field and less about what the hot stove successes were or work agenda was. And once that happens, I'm sure I'll just be labeled good GM or bad GM, depending on how it works out.
And how are you adjusting to being a general manager to where things are starting to feel natural? Or at the same time, is there one particular element of the transition that you are finding or you think you will find most challenging?
Well, I'm learning every day. You know, I think the pace and the rhythm of the offseason has already had a few different twists and turns. I think the roster construction early on in the offseason was fast and furious. I think there was a human resources element to the job that was time-consuming that I didn't necessarily expect. And I'm sure I'll find different paces and obligations once the season starts and we start playing meaningful games.
As a first-time GM, how much are you relying on Omar Minaya and Allard Baird, who you've brought in, and even John Ricco, who's been with the Mets for a long time? You know, how much are you kind of leaning on them to help you along with some of these things that you're learning?
A lot, every day. And I would add Ruben Amaro to that mix, too. I mean, those are four guys, effectively, that had been general managers in the game, and I'm surrounding myself with them every day. I mean, I think I'm smart enough to know what I don't know and trying to have people around me that can help answer those questions for me.
Wayne brought up Jacob deGrom's name a moment ago. His new agents are around. Are you making any progress to what you would consider at the point of optimism towards getting an extension done with Jake soon?
Well, I think that we continue to have a mutual understanding that we want to get the business resolved one way or another to have clarity by the end of spring training before the season starts. The last thing I think Jacob wants, and certainly the last thing that we want, is to have distractions once the season gets going. So we'll continue the dialogue and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to reach a resolution in that timeline.
Do you look at him as a typical 30-year-old pitcher, or does the fact that, you know, he didn't really put a lot of mileage on his arm as a young player, he was a shortstop, he didn't really turn to pitching until he was deeper into his collegiate career, does that all factor in to say, Mitt, yeah, maybe he's 30-some years old, but maybe his arm's really the same as a 27 or 28-year-old?
Well, I mean, from my experience with Jacob, I mean, I met him when he was in AA, and his ascension to the big leagues was so rapid from the time that I'd met him to then Rookie of the Year his first year, All-Star his second year, had an injury in 2016, and then had a 200-inning and 200-strikeout season in 17, and then a Cy Young in 18. So he's been extraordinary from the beginning, and I think that, you know, we're always going to look at workload. We're going to look at velocities. But, you know, ultimately, he's the best pitcher in the game as far as I'm concerned right now, and we hope him to be going forward.
I think one of the most fascinating things about this club is the depth that you've assembled, not only on the field, but in the front office with regard to analytics, which is such an integral part of the game now. And there's so much information available. Now you've got a lot of people who are schooled at finding that information. What is the challenge that you expect you'll have to sort of filter that information so that the manager and the coaches are not overloaded and, by extension, the players don't become overloaded?
Well, first off, I think that, you know, when I came in and I interviewed for the job, there was a commitment from ownership to give me the resources and give our office the resources to bolster and invest in the analytics department.
And that was a big thing that had to happen here.
It was important, and I think that that was we were able to do that quickly in the first few days or first 4 months of our regime. Once we had that capability, to your point, we then needed to be able to create a bridge from that information to the dugout. We added Luis Rojas to a new position on our coaching staff that we're calling a quality control coach. We added Mike Wickham, who's had a long history in baseball, to be part of our advanced scouting replay, and also sort of a bridge to our pitching coach, Dave Island. And so we're really going to try to implement the information in game day decision making.
One of the things that I'm sure is going to be a challenge is, and this is big news today, by the way, Peter Alonso now wants to be called simply Pete Alonso. So, okay, Pete Alonso is going to have a chance to be the Mets' starting first baseman this year. The business of baseball suggests that even if he has a great spring, you have an opportunity effectively to trade the first couple of weeks of his big league career for one extra year of team control, and that year presumably would be in his prime. And I know that the Cubs exercised that with Chris Bryant a few years ago, and it seemingly has worked out well for the Cubs. I know you've talked about wanting to bring Pete up north from the get-go if he earns it, but isn't there not risky business in doing that if he does come north day one?
Well, I think for the team that we've built now and then hopefully every year to come is that the games in April are just going to be just as important as they are in September. And so we don't want to miss out on winning the division by a game or two games because we didn't break camp with the best 25 guys. And if Pete's one of those guys, then we're gonna do that. I think on the business side, quote unquote business side, if Pete Alonso or any of our young players makes it up to the big leagues at opening day and goes six straight years without a break in service, that's a high class problem for us.
With the way that you've constructed this team, how do you want to see Mickey shape playing time for some of the depth that you've created?
We've talked a lot about that, and I think that our approach is really to be a collaboration between the front office, the analytics department, Howie, as you talked about, and the coaching staff to make sure we're managing workloads. We've got a veteran roster, and we've also got some young players that we want to break in a fashion where they can be successful and not be overwhelmed with the first year or two in the big leagues. But we've got a 36-year-old second baseman. Jed Lowry's a 35-year-old utility guy. Frazier's 33, coming off a year where we had the first trip to the disabled list. And then we have Peter Alonso or J.D. Davis or even Ahmed Rosario, young players that shouldn't have to go face the best of the best every night. They should get mental and physical breaks, too, so that they can be better over the long run.
What's the sweet spot, for games played with a Robinson Cano or a Jed Lowry? What's that number range look like to you?
Well, obviously, it depends on everybody's health. But, the way we've looked at it is you've got four infield positions, 162 starts at each position, obviously at four different spots. Let's call it five players that are going to be rotated around. And if you divide those four positions by five players, you're about 130 starts per guy. That's if everybody's healthy and everybody's playing equally. We know that's not going to happen because circumstances are going to change that. But I think that we'll use performance, matchups, and workload to assess our lineups.
How is Jed Lowry? Did you get the results of the MRI?
So we got some initial results, and as we expected, doesn't appear to be a serious injury. But Jed's a veteran player, as we discussed, and we want to make sure we progress him properly so he's at his peak when he comes back 100%.
With the way that spring training goes, kind of a long spring training schedule starting pretty early, how do you want to see the pitchers develop and work toward opening day?
Well, each pitcher is a little bit different. We've got some real competition in camp for our bullpen spots, and we've got a Rule 5 guy in Kyle Dowdy that we need to get some looks on. But our starting pitchers and our top relievers, we want to make sure that they're paced properly, because for our starters, they need to be right come October. And Edwin Diaz and Familia, those guys have had heavy workloads. Let's make sure they're fresh.
We've only got about a minute, but are you still in the market for added rotation depth?
Well, I think any good team should always be in the market for everything. That's my approach. So we're monitoring every situation. We're still communicating to people. But really, now that everybody's in camp, we like our club. We like the guys we have here, and we're looking forward to seeing them play.
Well, Brody, we look forward to working with you for a number of years, and we certainly hope that not only is the transition successful, but that the entire season is a huge one for the New York Mets.
Guys, thank you so much. Look forward to working with you.
Thanks a lot, Brody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.